All right, enough fun.
Oh. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Crimes, Killers, Cults.
And beer.
And beer. Oh, man. In case you're wondering what the hell that was all about, I mean, it was biker sounds because we're covering the biker case today.
Something like that.
I like mine better. Oh, man. Anyway, I'm Bill.
And I'm Paul.
And we're going to have some fun today. This case, you know, this is the second entry into our Canada binge. And I'm telling you, this case is crazy.
Yeah. Quite a few years of craziness.
Yeah. And yeah. But before we get started, this is the first one that we've done in a while that was just like days before it actually gets released. So how's it going, Paul?
It's going, man. It's busy. It is a busy season. I don't know if it's because of spring has sprung on us and the time has changed, or it's just, yeah.
They need to leave it the way that it is.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, what sense does it make to, okay, it gets darker earlier during the winter. So let's push it back to make it even darker, even earlier. What sense does that make?
I know. I mean, really? They're trying to get rid of all the farmers anyway. So, I mean, that was one of the only reasons, one of the original reasons was to get an extra few hours of daylight for planting and harvesting.
It doesn't make any difference. I mean, there was an Indian chief that said, only in America could you take a foot off of one end of a blanket and attach it to the other and expect a larger blanket.
Yeah. I'm stupid Americans.
Well, the Canadians do it too.
Yeah, yeah. But some guy on the block was like, hey, okay. And they believed it.
It makes no freaking sense though. I mean, you know, if the thing is to have more daylight, so why take daylight away even more daylight away when it's starting to get darker earlier in the anyway?
Yeah.
Makes no sense. And by the way, it was law to leave it like this. It was voted on in Florida. That is law in Florida. It just hasn't been done yet.
Yeah. And they didn't have enough signatures last year to take it off. They were going to can it, but they didn't have enough support for it. I'm like, what? Everybody I talked to wants it.
Yeah. Like,
talking to the wrong people.
Yeah, I know. It's just stupid. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Unless you live in Arizona. I got quite a few people on the show that, you know, that are from Arizona, and they just have to keep reminding me, oh, we just want to let you know we don't observe daylight savings time.
Yeah, the only smart state in the entire country.
Yeah, right.
I think Indiana does it too. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
No. That's what Indiana's known for. Bad roads, cults, and not following the daylight savings time bullshit. Right.
Oh man. And that's the thing, living in China, when I lived in China, they never observed it. The whole country's like, they're like, what daylight? No.
Yeah,
crazy Americans.
Just leave it the way that it is. Yeah, I don't like it being dark at 5:30 in the evening.
No. Yeah. Way too early.
Oh, I lived in Chattanooga for a few years, and Chattanooga is like right, you know, close to where, from where, it's in the Eastern time zone, but it's really close to where it becomes central. Mm-hmm. And during the summer, there's still daylight out at 10 o'clock at night. Loved it. I mean, just a little bit, but I freaking loved it.
Wow. I'd like to, I want to get a bit of that Alaskan time stuff, you know, that 6 months of daylight. It's like, man,
But it was so cool. It was so cool because at 9 o'clock, it's still like evening, you know, 9:30. Yeah. It doesn't really start getting dark until, you know, during like July there, it doesn't really start getting dark until like 9:30 at Whoa. Night. And at 10 o'clock, there's still like a trace of the sun left in the sky.
Man. Yeah, I bet you those bars stayed open really late. That's a 24-hour schedule.
But they stay open. They stay open till 3 in Tennessee. Jeez.
Oh, hey there. You like true crime stories, right? Yeah, I know. Who doesn't? But I gotta admit, after a while, all those stories of murder and heartache, well, they tend to go straight to my hips. So that's why I, Leroy Luna, have created a podcast called Excuse Me, That's Illegal, where we'll take a hardcore look at some softcore crimes. No TED Talks on Bundy here. The letters BTK won't be coming from these lips. Unless he had a brother that used to steal library books. Suppose I'd be willing to go balls deep into that one if that were the case. Anyways, you'll hear stories such as the Mad Pooper, a female jogger who wreaked havoc in a Colorado Springs neighborhood, using one family's front yard as her own personal dumping grounds. If this kind of content sounds like it's up your alley, Excuse Me, That's Illegal, is available right now on all your favorite podcatchers. So come join me.
I'll be right here waiting for you.
Bye.
But anyway, I have no more ado. Do you?
I do not.
All right. We haven't had a do in episode in a while. But anyway, tonight we're covering the Quebec Bike Wars. And in 1994 in Quebec, a biker war broke out between the Quebec chapter of the Hells Angels and a local club there called the Rock Machine. Well, it wasn't just local. We'll get into that. The war lasted from 1994 to 2002, and it resulted in 162 people dead, including innocent people who were in the wrong place at the wrong time. And some were even children. And there were 84 bombings and 130 cases of arson. Crazy shit. Oops, crazy stuff. We're within 5 minutes. Okay. we're outside of 5 minutes. I can say shit all I want. The story got very little attention outside of Canada. And according to Mark of Mental Illness Theater, our buddies, you know, our buddy podcast, it got very little attention outside, you know, in Canada itself, outside of like the Quebec and surrounding areas, which is crazy considering the New York Mafia didn't even cause this much carnage, not to mention collateral damage to civilians in its heyday during Prohibition.
Well, that's because they had their heads together, man. They're business people. This is like, you know,
careful.
They were careful. Maybe diplomatic. A little bit more diplomatic than.
Well, the mafia is involved. The mafia is involved in this story.
Yeah.
This is a crazy, crazy story. I don't know why it's not known. I hadn't heard of it. The first I had heard of it was when I started looking for cases to cover in our Canada.
I'm gonna wear my hat. Shit.
Hey, the Edge is back.
Hey.
So what I did is I was looking for some obscure cases, you know, lesser known cases to cover for Canada because, you know, we like to do the lesser known ones whenever we can. So we start with Alan Legere. That one's kind of known, but not as well known as a lot of cases. And I found this one. I was like, okay, that's one. And next week's episode is a very obscure cult, very creepy one too. And then we're going to wrap it up with Willie Picton, which is going to be at least a two-part, maybe even a three-part. Actually, the cult episode might wind up being two parts as well. I don't know yet. But so yeah, we're going to be in Canada for a while. And you know what? After Willie Picton, I might decide, hey, let's keep going with Canada. Let's stay in Canada.
Yeah, right. We might get some invites.
Because if I can find more freaking cases like this, damn.
Yeah.
Anyway.
What stays in Canada, what happens in Canada sometimes stays in Canada. Apparently. There's a lot of stuff that happens up there. That, you know, nobody ever knows about that.
Right.
That happened? Wow.
I mean, you'd expect something like this to happen in like Los Angeles, but it didn't.
Mm.
It happened in Canada. Yeah. So this war, this was caused over turf and drug trade disputes between two motorcycle clubs who were once considered to be allies. Kinda. The Hells Angels would ultimately win, and many Rock Machine members defected to the Hells Angels. In 2001, the remaining members of Rock Machine merged with another club called the Bandidos, or patched over. They were patched over. That's biker terminology for you're ours now, bitch. Yeah.
You're riding bitch today.
Yeah. What ended it ultimately was a police crackdown that was long overdue. And once the war was stopped, the Bandidos surrendered and were absorbed by the Hells Angels. So we're going to start with a brief history of the Hells Angels and the Quebec chapter, as well as a brief history of Rock Machine. So before we dive into the war, let's delve into the brief history. Just brief. I mean, I don't know what the hell I'm saying. Let's ride. I shouldn't have put my guitar down. But sources are the book by R.J. Parker, Hell's Angel, Biker Wars, The Rock Machine Massacres, and a little bit of wiki. There is a surprising amount of information on this in wiki. So apparently somebody knew about it.
Yeah.
Hell's Angels were formed in 1948 in Fontana, California by World War II veteran Otto Friedel. When he and other members of the Pissed Off Bastards motorcycle club left on their own. The name Hell's Angels was suggested by Arvid Olsen, who was in the Hell's Angels squadron of the Flying Tigers during World War II. Both the founder and the origin of the name are disputed, but that's for an episode that we may or may not do on the Hell's Angels themselves sometime in the future. And we might. I'm friends with a lot of bikers. In fact, the Space Coast Harley Davidson over in Palm Bay, They do like live shows, like live events there every single weekend, bringing bands and stuff, sometimes touring bands and everything. And they always have free beer.
Ooh, yeah. Once a biker, always a biker. I was a biker, been a biker ever since I was just a little tyke.
Just a wee tyke?
Just a wee, eh?
No, but you ought to go over to Space Coast Harley sometime.
Cool.
I mean, they've had some pretty big concerts out there. So there's a plug, the best Harley Davidson dealership in Florida.
Oh, heck yeah. Yeah.
So during the 60s, the Hells Angels were involved in every counterculture event in California, most notably the time when they were hired to do security at a festival being headlined by the Rolling Stones, which ended badly. Who'd have thought that cocaine and alcohol fueled bikers wouldn't be the best idea to do security at an event full of hippies.
Yeah, it's a bad mix.
what could go wrong? Now that I did know about. I think there was a documentary about that that I watched at some point. It was crazy. But they're the it just blows my mind. We need security for this festival. Let's hire the Hell's Angels. So they were the first club to become notarized and legal, and they've branched out all over the world. They're notoriously linked to crime, including drugs, stolen goods, extortion, prostitution, organized crime, basically. Although it is isolated to random rogue chapters and members, aka the 1%. And according to the leadership of the organization, most of these activities are not condoned by the club. Most members are law-abiding citizens with a bit of a rough patch. And they're also very well known for extremely successful charity work.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I said, this is a biker friendly podcast. You know, Paul there is a biker, and I guess you could call me a hang around because I have a lot of friends that are bikers.
Yeah, yeah. I might be looking for a new horse. So if anybody out there's got something, let me know. Hey,
go to Space Ghost Harley. Talk to my man Tim.
Cool. Tim, you're listening.
But this is just a fraction of a nutshell of their history. And the history does, you know, it's not the focus of this episode, so don't come at us. And like I said, this is a biker-friendly podcast.
Yes.
Rock Machine was founded in 1986 in Montreal, Quebec by Salvador Cazetta, who was a part of the SS bike gang. And its name doesn't really hide very much. I mean, it was a white supremacist club, and obviously he and fellow SS member Maurice Boucher were leaders and were candidates to join the Hells Angels when it expanded there, which they later did. Along with longtime future president Fred Falscher and Giovanni Cazetta, who had been involved in the first biker war. Yeah, there was another one. And we're going to touch on that one a little bit. They formed the Rock Machine because they didn't want to join the Hells Angels. Yeah, just a lot of back and forth, a lot of political stuff, especially when you're dealing with these 1% bike clubs. So Rock Machine has 18 Canadian chapters, 9 U.S. chapters, 11 in Australia, as well as single chapters in 24 other countries, including Sweden. But put a knife in that. At least in Quebec, Rock Machine was the stereotype outlaw biker gang and had many arrests for drugs, violence, and organized crime. They also had connections to the Quebec Mafia. And they would not hesitate to attack anyone who got in their way, except for the Quebec Mafia, obviously. You don't want to mess with the Mafia. But, so now that the condensed version of the Reader's Digest condensed version of these two clubs is out of the way, let's talk about war.
Good God, y'all. What is it good for? Absolutely nothing.
Don't say it again. I guess singer is not part of your repertoire, is it?
No. Might be able to write it, but sing it.
Yeah. The Hells Angels entered Canada in 1977 to take over the bike gang, the Popeyes of Montreal. This began the first biker war, in which the Hells Angels not only took over the Popeyes, they drove the outlaws out of Quebec at the end of it completely. And the remaining outlaws helped form the Montreal Rockers Motorcycle Club, which at the time was a chapter of the outlaws. There'd be violence from 77 to 85 with bombings and motorcycle club members and leaders being taken out on both sides, but it was isolated to just the clubs and not nearly the scale of the second war. Regardless, the outlaws were driven out and the Rockers became Rock Machine later in 86. And things would stay somewhat normal other than the minor skirmishes from time to time until 1992, when the Hells Angels decided that they wanted to control the drug trade in Quebec.
Yep, got to find a way to finance, man.
Yeah.
Got to have an income.
We may go into detail about the first biker war at some point, because there is a lot there with it too. There's a lot to it. But for now we're focusing on the second. So yeah. If you want to hear us like go into detail about the first one, then blow this episode up. Listen to it. Show us, it's like, oh, they might want to hear about the other one. I got no problem, because this story is insane. I mean, it's just, it really is. But So like I said, the Hells Angels came to Quebec in 1977, and they had never been able to come into Canada full force for some reason. But Canada wasn't really high on Hells Angels' priority list at that point either. So they were coming in slowly, using their violent reputation as a catalyst. Nobody was going to take on even a small chapter of the Hells Angels, because if they did, that would bring the rest of the infantry charging in to back them up.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Hells Angels don't play.
No.
But there was also a little bit of beef between the Northern Canadian Hells Angels and the Southern. The Southern considered the Northern to be too wild, and they were cheating the South out of the club profits that they were owed. Everything was supposed to be split evenly, but the meth that they sold, and they at the time they sold exclusively meth. The meth was made by the Southern Hells Angels and sent north. The North was supposed to sell it and ship the money back to the South. And they weren't sending enough back, and the North was selling and keeping the take. Those damn Yankees!
Yeah.
Damn Yankees. And Canada's got Yankees too.
Yep.
So the Quebec Hells Angels chapter decided to put a stop to it. March of 1985, five senior members of the North Hells Angels were invited to Lennoxville to meet with the Quebec leaders. And when they got there, they were shot to death and their bodies were bagged and thrown into the river with weights. The South had sent the North sleeping with the fishes.
Whew. Ain't playing.
No. This, of course, started a serious fight between the North and the South, and this became known as the Lennoxville Massacre. This hit was very uncharacteristic of a biker gang, not to mention the mafia. Once the bodies were found by law enforcement, they were connected to Robert Snake Tremblay, Regine Zigzag Lessard, Sam Luke Michaud, and Harold Peltier. These four men were all high-ranking Quebec chapter members, so they should have ordered the hit, not carried it out. Well, you don't kill your own anyway, but still, you don't carry out the hit. You order the hit.
Yeah, unless they were very low on people, you had to do it yourself.
Right,
like you're looking around. Hey guys, I need to do a hit, and you look around. There's like nobody. You're like, oh, you're the only one standing there.
An army of one.
Yeah.
When they came out with that, I was living in Clarksville, Tennessee, which is where the 101st Airborne Division is. And when army of one, the soldiers would make jokes of just like an army of one. All right, Roberts, you're up. Good luck. Yeah, I never understood that army of one thing. I thought be all you can be, get an edge on life in the army was a much more effective slogan.
Yeah. Yeah. The lone wolf.
But so these men were arrested, and three of which were sentenced to 25 years in prison. Peltier was sentenced to a much shorter term. But put a knife in that. They're all out now, but this obviously created a vacuum in the upper ranks of the Quebec Hells Angels, and it also caused discontent with all the other Canadian Hells Angels members. And I'm pretty sure that the United States Hells Angels weren't very keen on it either.
Probably not. Yeah.
But in all of this, the Bandidos were nowhere near strong enough to take on the Hells Angels despite the discontent. So with the leadership in the North dead and the South in prison, new leadership was needed. You know, enter Maurice Boucher, and he had been a high-ranking member of the Quebec Hells Angels, and he had also been in the SS gang along with Salvatore Cazzetta. But Cazzetta decided that it was time to split, and you know, then he formed the chapter of the Rock Machine.
Hmm.
So if you're keeping score, the Quebec Hells Angels were now controlled by a white supremacist, as was the upstart Rock Machine.
Ha! What could go wrong?
A lot. No, but just pay attention to Boucher. This guy, you know, I mean, this guy is impressive. The Hell's Angel higher ups put Boucher in charge of putting the Montreal Hell's Angels back together. There's no easy task since the Lennoxville massacre hit had been carried out by that same chapter. And they were disliked even among other Hell's Angels chapters for obvious reasons. And Rock Machine was salt in the wound because it was being run by a Hell's Angel defector. Story's insane. Boucher, you know, he would have to deal with them too. And Rock Machine was poaching members from Hell's Angels and the Banditos, and they had taken a chunk of Montreal's drug trade. So Cazetta and the Rock Machine had to be dealt with. You know, this, by the way, this isn't going to be like, you know, like a serial killer going on a killing spree or whatever. There's a lot of subterfuge back and forth in this. There's a lot of planning. This whole gearing up to the war and everything. It's actually more interesting than the war itself.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, I was going through this and I loved it. And there's a lot that I left out just because it was like, it would have been like too wordy, you know? So I kind of hit on the, you know, like the main things, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Like they say, I mean, the devil is in the details.
Mm-hmm.
It's the details themselves, you know, what's leading up to it and all the little intricate, you know, all these nuances and stuff like that. That's what makes it interesting. That's what's just like, holy crap.
Well, I mean, look at all the stuff that happened leading up to World War One.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't just the shooting of Archduke Ferdinand. It was everything leading up to that point.
Mm-hmm.
Changing my vape batteries.
Aha.
It like literally just died on me.
Oh, shit. Well, at least they're changeable. I got to plug that sucker in and wait 25-50 minutes.
I've always got batteries on my charger. Always. Oh, much better. Okay, so where was I? Okay, Hell's Angels had to be number one. So, and this upstart club run by a traitor was gaining ground over Hell's Angels. And all the other chapters in Canada, not just in Canada, but the U.S. as well, were watching to see how Boucher would handle the situation. And this would not be an easy task.
Mm.
You know, Cazetta was connected to the Italian mafia in Quebec. And the Hells Angels wanted him in the first place because of his connections. So because of that, Cazetta was safe from Boucher personally, and Boucher knew that. If Boucher took out Cazetta, all of the Quebec mafia would retaliate, which would have, of course, caused the rest of the Hells Angels to come to their defense, which would bring in all their outside muscle as well. And if that happened, the Hells Angel versus mafia war would be extremely well known, and there's no telling how many people would have been killed. And that's if he got reinforcement from the other chapters, and that was not a guarantee because of the Lennoxville massacre. Just right there, there's a lot.
Yeah.
We're not even halfway through. So Boucher did what he needed to do to keep the peace for a good amount of time. But it wasn't Rock Machine that was protected by the mafia. It was Cazetta himself. So this protected Rock Machine from Hell's Angels because Hell's Angels beef was with Cazetta. The mafia connections did not protect Rock Machine from anybody else.
Mm.
So Rock Machine had a target on their backs from other gangs who didn't dare try to take on the the Rock Machine territory previously because it had been Hell's Angels territory. Now they were a small fish in a big pond, and the other gangs took notice. They could do whatever they wanted to do as long as Cazetta wasn't harmed.
Underworld code of honor and politics.
Everything's got a politics. Mm-hmm. Politics schmolitics.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And here we are on the eve of the most disastrous election this country's ever seen.
Yeah. Getting closer to the end of the world.
Yep.
I'm not sure what the end of the world or zombie apocalypse. I'm not sure which one to be better.
I don't know.
I mean, at least you can run from the zombies.
Right. Unless they're those World War Z zombies.
Oh, I know. Good God. Suckers can run faster than a gator.
Every single one of them's like, you know, freaking Usain Bolt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Freaking track runners, for Christ's sake. Oh my God.
One of these days, this flimsy ass bottled water is going to tip over on my desk on its own. Hmm. It really,
you got those narrow bottom ones. We got those. Yeah,
it's angled. It's literally at an angle. It's like the Leaning Tower of Pisa.
Need to get one of those like koozies you can slip it in, but it has like a wide base.
Yeah,
that way you can really bump the table and it'd still stand there.
Yeah, the ones made for beer cans.
Yeah,
but as far as Cazetta was concerned, the Hell's Angels had broken the golden rule. You never kill your own, which is why he left. And that gave him more cred as far as the mafia was concerned. So, but the smaller gangs were joining forces to take Rock Machine territory. And this was the first signs of saber rattling and the real possibility of a war. Cazetta was able to hold off these smaller gangs. But this was essentially the South firing on Fort Sumter.
Mm.
And if you come at me and say, no, the Fort Sumter's in the South. Yeah, it is. It's in South Carolina. But the South, but Fort Sumter was occupied by the North at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So don't come at me. I know my history. No, I actually got into an argument with... about that with somebody like some years ago or whatever. It's like, no, man, it was the South that was in Fort Sumter. No, it wasn't. It was the North. They had occupied it.
Yeah. Get out of my fort.
Yeah.
Hey.
If you want to go see a fort, you know, obviously the Castillo de San Marcos in St. Augustine is a good one to see.
Mm-hmm.
Fort Sumter, not so much, because it was retrofitted, and it doesn't really look historical anymore, because like half of it looks modern because it was used in World War II, and half of it looks, you know, like historical.
Yeah.
If you want to see a good one, go see Fort Pulaski in, off of Tybee Island in Georgia. Ooh. That's a good fort to go see. Probably the nicest one in existence, next to like Fort Jefferson down on Loggerhead Key.
Hey, yeah. Yeah.
Which I haven't been to, which is on my bucket list. But anyway, hashtag, but I digress. Hmm. So prior to the biker war, the Bandidos were top dog in the drug trade in Quebec, and they and the mafia had their own territories, and both sides respected that. The Bandidos were one of the gangs that had their eye on Rock Machine territory, and they had a plan. They offered Rock Machine support. This would protect Rock Machine from practically any threat that came at them and would put the Bandidos in the mafia's good graces. That and Rock Machine would then owe them a cut of their money. Politics.
Yep. Yep.
Cazetta agreed and he offered the Bandidos a larger than normal cut, as well as manpower from Rock Machine if the Bandidos ever needed it. the Banditos agreed and took Rock Machine under their wing, so they were allied, but the Hells Angels had been busy as well, and they knew about the Rock Machine alliance with the Banditos, and they were not happy about it. Mm-mm. Boucher had to get its reputation that it had lost, as well as the turf that was now controlled by Rock Machine. Hells Angels didn't have the manpower to maintain their grasp, and Hells Angels brass expected them to hold on to it and were hesitant to send help. Boucher needed to prove his worth, and that was hard to do because of the mafia factor. At this point, the Montreal Hells Angels were basically alone, an independent gang. And Boucher had literally zero to do with the Lennoxville massacre, but he inherited the problem when he took over the gang. But if he were to succeed, he would need to secure the turf, and to do that, he'd need backup from the American One Percenters, and to get that help, he'd have to prove himself.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a catch-22 and an infinite figure eight.
Yeah, it is. Literally. The 8%. But the American Hells Angels saw Boucher as an embarrassment, and Boucher even offered to compensate the Northern Hells Angels whose leaders had been offed. And that started him back on the right path with them, but it wasn't enough. But it did show them that he ran things differently. And remember, the Northern ones were professional. Mm. They were a little wild and shady, but you know, they had a code.
Yeah, yeah.
It's almost like, you know, the freaking Corleone family or something.
Oh yeah.
Finally, after a couple of years, he was in good with the Northern chapters. And he didn't just go to the larger chapters either. He went to the smaller ones as well and gave them respect while the larger chapters were treating the smaller chapters like support clubs. So Boucher was smart. I keep wanting to call him Boucher, like Bobby Boucher.
Oh, yeah.
It might be Boucher. I don't know.
I think it might be.
French-Canadian.
I knew someone by that last name. I think it might be Boucher.
Boucher? Okay, Boucher. Yeah. Boucher was smart, so he was able to call on the smaller clubs for help, and they'd give it more freely than the larger clubs. Dude knew what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
The last problem was he needed his own numbers. If he needed fighters quickly, he would need his own, because while the other chapters, they would come at this point, it would take time for them to get there. Can't just wah, 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 wah.
Yeah, right.
I love that South Park I love that South Park episode with the bikers, when the bikers just rolling up like with their mouths. That's hilarious. Those guys are geniuses. Trey Parker, yeah. And Matt Stone. They go at everybody.
Yep.
I love it.
Man.
But
nobody's immune. Nobody. From them.
I'm just waiting on them to do a episode somehow dissing each other.
Yeah. Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't, yeah. They need to roast each other or something like that on their birthdays or something.
Yeah. But being low on manpower locally made him a sitting duck for any of the other gangs in Montreal with eyes on their assets. And Rock Machine was gaining numbers on their own without the Banditos. Another problem, obviously, would be that if he had to rely on outside help, rival gangs would see, you know, lines of Hell's Angels patches pouring into Montreal. So Boucher relaxed the strict guidelines on criteria for new prospects who would be desperate to prove themselves to the Hells Angels, and fighting for the Hells Angels would prove their worth. So, I mean, he's not letting them in. He's just making it easier for them to become prospects.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I almost bought a bike a few years ago, but I chickened out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because about the time that when I was considering it, I was in a car accident.
Oh.
That did some, yeah, the crystals in your head, it kind of jumbled them.
Yeah.
I was out of work for like over a month and everything, and, you know, had to get that fixed. I mean, it was like serious vertigo. You know, it not only misaligned the crystals in my head, it also made, you know, made me decide against getting a bike. Because.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I was serious. I was going to get one. But I mean, I had been talking with a salesperson and, we'll just say it was that Space Coast Harley.
There you go. Yeah. Gotta have those plugs every now and then. Heck yeah.
What I was going to do, I was going to talk, you know, basically let the guy sell me a bike here, and then I was going to go buy it over at Space Coast. But that was my plan anyway. But sorry, Lakeland Harley, but my loyalty is to Space Coast.
Yeah.
Tim's going to listen to this episode. He's going to be like, dude, really? You got chickened out because of a car accident? Yeah, I did. So Boucher had to stockpile weapons and ammo. He was able to do this by utilizing Quebec's drug shipping lanes that the Montreal Hells Angels still ran. Passage for weapons, and nobody from the rival clubs to the mafia to law enforcement even had a clue. I mean, he had literally put together an arsenal.
Mm.
Just by running the same routes that they would bring in the drugs in.
Yeah.
Which, like I-95 is like one of the biggest drug hubs in the country. And, you know, so something similar to that. I mean, it didn't really go into detail about exactly what they did.
Yeah.
But he needed the U.S. Hells Angels respect, and that got it. He had made himself and the Hells Angels stronger, and he had done it right under everybody's, even the Northern Hells Angels chapter's noses. So the Americans now trusted Boucher. And now that, that Boucher had successfully brought the Montreal Hells Angels back into the graces of the rest of the chapters, it was time. And, you know, at this point in the story, I'm super impressed with Boucher. I mean, that guy, you know, how can you not? I mean, he's a genius.
Yeah. Yeah. He was handed a lemon, but he made hard lemonade.
Hard lemonade. Because bikers aren't going to be drinking just regular lemonade that Little Shirley at our lemonade stand selling on the side of the street. It's got to be Mike's Hard Lemonade.
Yeah.
Feel free to sponsor us, Mike's Hard Lemonade.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, Shirley's Lemonade Stand, you can sponsor us too if you want.
True. Heck yeah, man. Yeah. We got all kinds of, we have all kinds of angles.
Yeah. What are you drinking there?
This is Waterloo sparkling pineapple. It's not spiked, no.
Waterloo.
Right. ABBA.
Very underrated. Well, no, I wouldn't really. They're not underrated.
At their time, they were. I mean, when it comes to disco, man, back then, hell yeah.
They were drop dead gorgeous, and they had the most angelic voices.
God, yeah.
Back in the early 2000s, there was this little teenage band that was put together by a record executive called A-Teens.
Yeah.
And they basically did nothing but ABBA covers.
Oh shit.
They were pretty good too, considering. Huh. Yeah, considering they were just mass produced, you know, boy band type of thing with two hot chicks in it. Yeah. But, and they didn't even have to pay a writer because all they did was ABBA songs.
Exactly. Just got to get the notes right, man.
Yeah. Yeah, but they did it. I remember because at the time I was working rent to own. You know how if you walk into one of those places, they've got this weird music that nobody's ever heard of playing on TVs and everything. Well, that's how I found out about them. And they had videos for Super Trooper and Waterloo. And I was actually pretty impressed. I was just like, wow. Their cover of Super Trooper was excellent. One for Waterloo was pretty good, but the Super Trooper, I think, was, you know, hashtag, but I digress. But Rock Machine and the Banditos were nice and comfy, thinking that they had everything locked down. They had no idea of the army and the arsenal that Bowser had assembled. They were in charge, and they were enjoying it. They had the biggest share of the drug trade, and they were even closing in on as much of it as the Mafia had.
Okay.
This was starting to become a problem for Cazetta. The Mafia didn't like equal parts. Yeah, and plus, Cazetta was looking to get his own drugs to sell for himself, and he wanted to expand beyond meth, which was only mass-produced by Hell's Angels and the Banditos. He wanted more. He wanted cocaine and heroin, which, you know, he got, and then he sold to the Banditos, which kind of leveled the playing field between the two of them. Next thing Cazetta knew, he was a main supplier of cocaine, and this got the smaller clubs on Rock Machine's side. But with this huge influx of heroin,
that's a new one. I mean, it might exist.
Carowin. Like heroin with caramel in it?
Yeah. No, it's heroin and cocaine.
Heroin and cocaine together. Mixed together?
Yeah.
That's a
dual concoction there, man.
Yeah, my brain is frying just thinking about that. But when this large influx of cocaine and heroin came into the area, law enforcement took notice, you think? The task force was put together to find out who this new supplier was, and before too long, Cazetta had been ratted out. And he was arrested at a pit bull kennel that he had used as a front for cocaine, and probably dogfighting as well.
Yeah.
You don't have a... If you have a kennel exclusively for pit bulls, you're not running a charity. No. Looking at you, Michael Vick. He was busted after receiving a major shipment. He was found with, take a guess.
Tons of cocaine.
11 of them.
Ooh. 11.
11
tons.
Tons of cocaine.
Holy shit.
That's a lot of cocaine.
Wow. Right.
It's a good thing that he didn't use his own shipment. Otherwise, the movie Scarface would have been about him.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
But Cazetta was now out of the picture, which meant that they didn't have the Mafia to worry about it anymore. So now it was time for war. Not surprisingly, after Cazetta's arrest, Rock Machine had issues of their own, and Bowser seized on this to the surprise of nobody. Bowser seized on this to the surprise of nobody. What the hell did I write there? Bowser seized on this to the surprise of nobody. Well, nobody inside Hell's Angels. Nobody outside saw this coming. That's what. Yeah. Okay.
There we go.
It just looked weird. I wrote it right. It just looked weird.
Yeah.
So he began creating puppet clubs, which are smaller clubs to do the Hell's Angel dirty work. And they were put together by the general, as in like, Bowser,
He's the general.
He's the general. I wonder if he can get me a good rate on my car insurance.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But these clubs were made up of lesser known members of Hell's Angels as well as new prospects. And their mission? Create rifts within the Rock Machine. They would go to Rock Machine businesses and try to convince the owners that Rock Machine was done and their ability to make money had dried up. That and the drugs had also dried up, and that they should just sell off their interest to the Hell's Angels.
Yeah.
The subterfuge was very strategic. If Bowser could cripple Rock Manager without firing a shot, that was the best case scenario. That way, law enforcement would have no clue that anything was going on. And even if they were tipped off, so what? It's private business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There was another issue. Cazetta's drug source had not... That was my ice maker startled me.
Oh, wow. It was that loud?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Well, keep in mind this monster of a mic here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody across the street could sneeze and this mic would pick it up. But.
You need to get into the spy. Spying.
It's just a condenser mic. But there was another issue. Cazetta's drug source had not been arrested. Cazetta's arrest had left a vacuum for dealers wanting cocaine and heroin, and Bowser saw an opportunity, but the banditos did too.
Mm.
The issue also caused problems for Bowser because his members wanted to go to war with Rock Machine right then when they were vulnerable and take over. One Hell's Angel member took matters into his own hands and left a note in a Rock Machine business stating that Hell's Angel was going to take over Rock Machine territory and soon.
Mm.
Dumbass. This, of course, tipped Rock Machine off and they started arming up, which, of course, undid all of Bowser's brilliant strategy.
Mm.
Rock Machine realized that these upstart clubs were actually Hell's Angel puppet clubs. This letter was essentially the first shot fired in the war. And there's nothing here saying whether or not the guy who dropped off the letter suffered any repercussions, but I imagine that he did.
Yeah, I'm sure somebody snitched. He probably told you do something like that, you're going to tell somebody you did something like that.
Well, I mean, hell, it could also be so simple as like the owner of the business, you know, all right. Who dropped this off?
Yeah.
You know, well, what did he look like? Well, he was wearing a Hell's Angels vest. but everything that had happened set the pieces in motion for the war, and it was beginning. And I don't know about you, Paul, but I love all the history and pieces and all the pieces having to come together to start this thing. It fascinates me. It's like a game of chess or Risk. What do you think?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a 3D chess game. There's stuff coming in all different angles.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like that, the cops, show there in Miami and stuff like that with, what's her name?
I don't know.
One of her past shows. I don't even remember the name of it. God dang it. That one.
Cops?
Yeah, cops. Yeah, cops. Cops showed up, you know. The show. And they were doing make up the scene and stuff like that. And then they bust them. Like, oh, all right.
Dexter.
Yeah.
So, I didn't know what to think when I started this episode, but I love the I love strategy and the story is full of it.
Mm-hmm.
Two Hell's Angel Puppet Club members walked into a Rock Machine business on Belcher's orders to try and muscle the business over to Hell's Angels. unbeknownst to Boucher, the Bandidos and Rock Machine had put members of every single business that they owned in anticipation of Hell's Angels doing exactly this thing. You know, the Hell's Angels puppet saw the members of the Bandidos and Rock Machine, and they opened fire as a way to say, after much consideration, we at Rock Machine and Bandidos have decided to reject your generous offer. And as we say on the streets, it was on.
Man, you don't know shit about what goes on the street. There's shit that goes on in the street, man.
We drive on them.
Yeah, no, I meant the street. The word on the street. There's
the word on the street. There's
a lot of stuff on the street.
There's a word. The word on the street is there's a lot of stuff on the street.
Yeah.
Idiot drivers?
Yeah, sort of. Sort of. The word on the street. It's not the shit that's painted.
I put this on the Discussion Pub Facebook page. Like, the other night I was driving home from work, and you know, it was rainy, it was getting dark, and there was, you know, I was on a 2-lane highway. There was a semi coming down the road, and there was this car behind it flashing its brights. I'm like, what the hell? Like, that, it's a wet road. You want this guy to go faster on a 2-lane road? I'm like, the guy's being, you know, the guy's driving very safely, and he's doing that for stupid people like you.
Yeah.
Keep going, and somebody else flashes their brights, and I'm thinking, man, there's a bunch of impatient idiots on the road tonight. And then I happened to notice that my headlights were off. Oh. I was the idiot.
It's good that they were flashing you before you got the freaking red and blue.
Yeah, this is true. It wasn't quite that. They got me.
Right?
It wasn't quite that dark. It wasn't completely dark yet. But still, when I turned my lights on, it illuminated the reflectors. So it was dark enough.
You know, that'll happen to me every now and then. I'll be driving, you know. No, I got the lights that are always on.
Yeah.
They're not really bright enough, but at least somebody will see it coming.
Well,
but
mine are, I can set mine off, and the other, see, I've been recording a lot of new material lately for music. And, for those of you that don't know, the car stereo test is a good way to tell if you've got a good mix or not.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm doing that at night and everything. And I don't want to sit there, you know, in my driveway with my headlights on shining into my neighbor across the street's window. So I just turned them off and I forgot about it.
Yeah.
But. Still, I was the idiot. But one Rock Machine member was killed in the shootout, so there was no turning back now. As they say, in that Futurama episode, war were declared. But Boucher was ready, and the Bandidos and Rock Machine scrambled to get ready, but Boucher had spent the last 10 years getting ready.
Yeah, he was a prepper.
Yeah, the coalition that he had put together was bigger than both Rock Machine and the Bandidos combined. Ooh. Boucher called in all of his outside support and also began muscling the street-level drug dealers, saying that if they bought drugs from anybody other than Hell's Angels, they'd be considered enemies of Hell's Angels. Huh. So Boucher's playing the long game here, and he's crippling Rock Machine and Bandidos' ability to make money. Hmm. There was a man that I mentioned earlier, Harold Pelletier. He had been a leader in the Montreal chapter at the time of the Lennoxville massacre, and he had helped orchestrate it. And he was the one that got the short prison sentence.
Yeah.
But he had even tried to assassinate Boucher. Yeah, he wasn't a part of the Hells Angels at this point. Yeah, but Boucher muscled him into hiring a hitman to target the families of the Bandido members. Mid-level members, not high-level members. But this was to scare the mid-level members out of the war. And Pelletier did this, and soon a girlfriend of a Bandido was killed, The hits continued, and police had nothing to pin on Boucher since he had not personally hired the hitman. It all fell back on Peltier, who was considered an enemy anyway. Like I said, this guy's a freaking military genius.
Yeah.
God, if you, well, I guess you can make more money as the president of a biker gang than you can as a career soldier.
Yeah. Yeah.
If he had joined the military, that guy would have probably been like a general.
Oh yeah.
Like seriously, as smart as he was.
Yeah, he'd be wearing brass everywhere.
Mm-hmm. So at this point, it was just random skirmishes and isolated shootings and such, but that would change very soon to the equivalent of terrorist attacks. Mm-hmm. Hell's Angel began bombing the Bandito and Rock Machine businesses. And this was extreme, even for the most violent of the one percenters. Nothing like this had ever happened in a turf war before. Ever.
Wow.
June of 1995, Boucher formed the Nomads, which were essentially a special forces unit that would go anywhere in Canada to hunt the Bandidos and Rock Machine members. And to get in, they had to be initiated by killing somebody, and this made the group safe from any undercover police officers joining to infiltrate.
Wow. June of 95, you know, believe it or not, interestingly, that was the first time I laid down my first bike.
June of 1995?
Yep, summer of 95, when I laid my first bike down. First motorcycle accident.
Maybe a Nomad stuck a stick in your spokes.
Nah. Some asshole stopped in front of me and I couldn't freaking...
Maybe it was a Nomad.
Fast enough and...
Maybe it was a Nomad in Florida.
Maybe. Because
they went everywhere.
Yeah. I mean... Yeah,
mistaken identity. They thought you were a Rock Machine.
Right?
Dude, I just had an epiphany. This whole time I'm sitting here thinking Rock Machine, like rock music.
Yeah.
What were they selling?
Rock.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Duh. I wrote these notes over several days, and I've got this far into the episode, and just now registered.
The wonders of life.
Wow. August 9th of 1995, a Jeep exploded, killing its driver, Mark Dubay. He wasn't even a bike gang member. He was just a street-level drug runner who wasn't buying from Hell's Angels. But there was also an 11-year-old boy, Daniel Desrochers, who was killed in that explosion. And he was in a coma for 4 days before dying. And obviously, neither the Hells Angels or Rock Machine or Bandidos claimed responsibility for the bombing, because Daniel's death pissed a lot of people off.
Oh, I'm sure it did. Yeah, the community was like, oh, hell no.
Yeah.
We're going to find who did this.
Yep. And that led to Operation Carajou, which was a task force set up by the RCMP to end the war and get justice for Daniel. This turned out to be a fiasco due to bickering between the RCMP and the politicians on how it should proceed.
Hmm.
Picking politicians.
Wow.
That and the fact that the Montreal chapter of the RCMP was known to be a corrupt department. Police would take bribes to look the other way from both sides, and those who didn't take bribes received death threats. and also attorneys were a problem. Some were actually affiliated with one or the other gangs, and some were just scared to prosecute.
Hmm.
I can definitely see that.
I can see that. Yeah. I mean, there known some lawyers that were, you know, members of some gangs. I mean, outstanding lawyers and judges.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's not out of the norm to see, you know, you go in front of a judge for a traffic ticket, and then, you know, a couple of days later, you see him on a toy run.
Yeah.
You know, with a, you know, Abate patch on his back or something. Abate and the Outlaws are the big ones in Central Florida, as far as I know.
Mm.
But I don't think I've never really seen Hell's Angels around here other than just like passing through, like, or during bike week, obviously.
Yeah, during the bike week thing. There was a bar right up the street, not too far from where I live. Years ago, he would have the president of the Hell's Angels would always have the table in the back corner.
I need to get in touch with that bar over in Ormond Beach for next year's bike week.
Ooh, yeah.
We want to do a live event at the bar in Ormond Beach, which is which Eileen Warnos was her bar. Yep. And we want to do a live episode there during Bike Week.
Oh yeah,
we missed it this year because Bike Week just ended.
I know.
Well, you wouldn't have been able to do it anyway because you were deployed.
Yeah. Hopefully they don't have drills next year during Bike Week.
Yeah. Well, hope. Yeah, I mean, you could forgive me for doing the Bone Moselle grave visit without you, but I think you'd be pretty pissed off if I did the Eileen Warnos thing without you.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah,
but you weren't here for the Bone Moselle episode, so you really don't know anything about him.
Yeah.
You should listen to that episode. It's great. But episode
39.
But the bombings and shootings continued. Hell's Angels members were gunning down Rock Machine and Bandidos on the street, and they were doing it back to them. For every one Hell's Angel member that was killed, Hell's Angels killed four Rock Machine or Bandidos. There was a stretch of several weeks where there was at least one bombing every single day, sometimes more. They even bombed a strip club and a used car dealership.
Well,
I mean, the used car dealership I can see, but the strip club? Well, it could have been owned by a member of Rock Machine or something.
And
those girls, they're not innocent either. They're you know, a lot of them are probably, you know, property.
Yeah. Property.
But this war even spilled into the US and even Mexico. One rock member, or rock machine member, Norman Baker, was on vacation in Acapulco, and he was killed by a Hell's Angels member while he was there at a concert at the Hard Rock Cafe there.
Whoa.
I don't know if this was a Canadian, you know, like a Montreal Hell's Angel that came down, or maybe it was a Hell's Angel member there in Mexico or in Acapulco. I don't know. But my question is, why the hell is Norman Baker on vacation in Acapulco during the war?
Yeah.
Especially when you're on the losing side of it.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's why he was on vacation.
That's why he was on vacation.
But the man that had killed him had arrested. He was arrested, but the Mexican police department was the Acapulco... The Acapulco Police Department was bribed by the Hell's Angels to turn him loose. So, but it was the Canadian chapter that did it. But that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, that was the Canadian chapter that funded it because it was their hit. But that doesn't necessarily guarantee that the guy that did the killing was a Canadian member of the Hell's Angels.
Yeah.
Because he's there fighting a war. You know, the Canadians, you know, Hell's Angels, they're there fighting a war. They're not going on vacation. But then again, it could have been a nomad.
Could have been. Yeah.
It doesn't say. But get killed at the Hard Rock Cafe.
Yep, there's another rock.
Rock Machine and Bandidos were shocked at the severity of the assault that Hell's Angel was throwing at them. Remember, word on the street was that the Hell's Angels were crippled. So it was inevitable that Rock Machine and Bandito's money would dry up. And they were also losing ground to the Hell's Angels. And they were in such disarray that they couldn't even meet anywhere to plan out counterattacks in fear that the building would explode the moment they went inside.
Yeah.
Now this is crazy. At the same time, the Great Nordic Biker War was going on over in Sweden. It was like biker wars going on all over the freaking world.
Yeah.
That might be something I want to look into too. If we want to, you know, like if this one's well received, we might do the first biker war in Canada. We might do the Great Nordic Bike War too.
Yeah.
You know, depending on how this one's received, but if we do the first war in Canada, then we're going in like Star Wars order.
Yeah.
But the Bandidos and Rock Machine were impressed with how well the Swedish chapter of the Rock Machine was doing. So three Rock Machine members went to Sweden to try and get support, but they were sent packing by Swedish authorities who didn't want any Canadian bikers in Sweden. But still, I kind of got a... It's like, I don't get that mindset either. Boucher would not have done that. You know, Boucher wouldn't have sent... like Hell's Angels members to Sweden if the Hell's Angels members were already in a war of their own.
Yeah.
Like you're going to take soldiers away from us to come help you. Yeah. It's like, I know we're brothers and everything, but come on, man.
Yeah. It's counterproductive. All the interesting stuff he's done thus far and tactics. It's like, why would he do that?
No, Boucher didn't do that. Rock Machine did that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to, it's like, we got, word must have gotten to the Swedish authorities that, hey, these three chuckleheads are on their way to talk to the Swedish Rock Machines. They probably head off at the airport and be like, yeah, about face. But I'd like to know what it would have happened if they had made it to the leadership in Sweden. You know, you're like, what the hell are you? We got our own problems. Yeah, you know?
Right. Yeah, causing a world war, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, it's like, freaking go back and eat your syrup.
Yeah.
With your split bouncing heads.
Right.
We love you, Canada.
Yeah.
So the Bandidos decided to do something else. Take a guess.
The
United States Hells Angels members hadn't even arrived yet, and the Bandidos knew that once they did, it would be over. And so they approached the Quebec Mafia. The Mafia was even nervous at the ferocity that the Hells Angels had brought, and so they sat down in talks with the Bandidos. So apparently the Hells Angels had brought it.
Oh, they brought it.
They brought it. The Mafia began finding Boucher's weapon suppliers and making them go away. Read that however you want.
Ooh.
It would take Boucher a while to find another supplier. So the balance, this should shifted the balance of terror. Star Trek reference there.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the Bandidos began reaching out to any other criminal organization they could find, such as street gangs, telling them they better join up with them unless they wanted to be subservient to the Hell's Angels. That's what was at stake if the Hell's Angels had won the war.
Huh.
So the AAHA was formed. Alliance Against Hell's Angels. Other sources call it the Alliance to Fight the Angels. So with this alliance, the Rock Machine and the Bandidos stood a chance and even held their own against the Hell's Angels for several years. So it was back and forth, more or less a stalemate with civilian casualties in addition to gang member casualties, obviously.
Yeah.
So by now, the police were wanting this to end, and rightfully so, but this had become a political issue with politicians running on platforms of ending the bloodshed and violence.
Mm.
What are you going to do, freaking politician? I'm going to end this war. How are you going to do that?
And so, politicians will always do that. They will find something that's going on and use that for their campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, damn well. I mean, if two of those bikers busted into that office and started yelling at him, he'd piss his pants.
Yeah.
We wouldn't even have to point a gun at him. They're just, all right, you pencil neck. Actually, Canadians are polite, so it would have been like, all right, you pencil neck. I'm watching you. A. Hi. If we didn't make fun of you, it would mean that we didn't like you, Canada.
Exactly.
So we like Canada. So, some of our best friends are Canadian podcasters. Got Mental Illness Theater, got Buried Motives, got Morgan from Human Monsters. All Canada.
Oh, yeah. So. Dan Aykroyd.
Well, he's not a podcaster.
But
he listens to podcasters.
Yeah. Yeah.
He liked, he was that one podcaster in the Ghostbusters movie's only fan, only subscriber. I loved that movie, by the way, Ghostbusters Afterlife. I loved it. I absolutely loved that, and I can't wait to see the new one.
Oh, yeah, the new one. I'm just debating whether I'm just going to go to this, if I'm going to go to the theater to get the
I know, the popcorn. It's like a ghost trap. That's I might just go there and be like, can I just buy one of these? Because I hate the movie theater experience.
I know. It's like,
Well, me with my neck issues and my bad hip and everything, it's just, it's not a very pleasant experience for me to go sit in the movie theater.
Well, you got those, if they've redone them, you've got the new theaters now, because most of, like the one here and stuff, it's got, the seats kind of, it's like being in your own lounge chair or your own lazy boy in your living room. It's like they go back.
Yeah, I might fall asleep.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'll probably wait for it to come out and, to rent on like Prime or whatever.
Yeah. I'll just keep an eye on eBay. I'm sure people will probably be selling those things on there.
Yeah, true. Well, nah, I'd just go and buy one. Just fill it up with popcorn. Let me take it with me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because movie popcorn is good.
Yeah, exactly. I'll just find somebody, at the door and stuff. Hey, I'll give you some extra money.
Yeah.
Buy some popcorn and one of the things and bring it out.
Yeah. Buy me one of those things and buy yourself just a regular thing of popcorn. Yeah,
I'll give you some extra money. Buy two. One for yourself, one for me.
So then you're paying $50 for one.
Cost of doing business, brother.
we should hijack a delivery truck and steal all of the popcorn traps and then sell them on the street. Right. We'll blame Rock Machine. We'll frame them. Hey, I can drive the truck.
There you go. Love a shitload of those.
Yeah. So I can drive the truck. Yeah, that's no problem. So anyway, hashtag but I digress. The police began trying to get information, and they realized that literally every criminal in Montreal was involved in this war in some way, shape, or form. Like, everybody.
Ooh. Wow.
Bikers were getting killed daily on both fronts, and while the police were arresting anybody they caught with a biker patch, they were finally able to arrest and charge six Hells Angels member with murder. Now put a knife in that. Boucher had kidnapped two cops who were trying to make deals with Hells Angels members, and he killed them to discourage the police from getting involved. That's that's the first thing Boucher's done that got his hands dirty.
Yeah. Holy crap.
I'm surprised he didn't have an underling do it.
Yeah.
But, well, it made more of a statement. I think Boucher at this point knew that he was going to go down one way or another. Spoiler alert. But it worked. The police actually pulled back for a couple years, and once again, this gave the Hells Angels the upper hand. The smaller clubs ran to the hills, and the mafia had pulled back as well, choosing just to protect their own assets rather than to participate in the war. And that horrified the Bandidos and the Rock Machine once they realized that they were on their own. Mm-hmm. 6 years into the war, Rock Machine was pretty much decimated, and the Bandidos offered patched Rock Machine members acceptance into the Bandidos, so basically a patch over. Now it was pretty much Hell's Angels versus the Bandidos, and despite heavy losses, Hell's Angels still held a considerable advantage. Hmm. But back to the Hell's Angel members who had been arrested. They agreed to testify against Boucher in exchange for a reduced sentence. So Boucher was arrested in a surprise raid and was charged with two counts of first-degree murder for the two cops that he had killed. In 2002, he was sentenced to 25 years in prison.
Ooh.
The Hells Angels still managed to wrap things up and secure their interests and became an equal to the Quebec Mafia in the drug trade. Now, Boucher had planned for the possibility of himself going down, and he had people ready to step up and take over if that happened. The Bandidos were so decimated at the end of the war that they just folded, just like Rock Machine, although years later, Rock Machine reformed as a crime-free motor club or motorcycle club, because Rock Machine still has chapters out there and everything. A lot of these bike clubs are like the Outlaws, you know, probably less than 1% of the Outlaws and Hells Angels are involved in shady shit anymore.
Yeah.
But since 2000, Hells Angels has had complete control over Quebec, and no other club has dared to try to oppose them. Boucher was in the St. Anne de Plains prison, which was a supermax, and he survived several assassination attempts in prison, and he was eventually put in isolation for his protection. He died of throat cancer on July 10th of 2022.
Wow.
Now, Cazetta gets a little more interesting. He was released from prison in June of 2004. He actually joined the Montreal Hells Angels in 2005 and he actually became the fucking leader. He led it from 2011 to 2016. In 2022, he was forced to retire because of disagreements with the other higher ups in the club.
Mm.
I got to imagine that there's some old timers there that didn't like the idea of him even being there, let alone running it.
True. True.
Because he was initially a traitor.
Yeah. They probably figured, okay, well, regardless of the history, it's almost like a corporation, you know, your CEO resigns. So, you know, your competition's CEO is like on the way out because he wants to retire, and you decide to hire him as a CEO of your company.
Yeah, it could be. I mean,
because you know he did a good job. He at least did something.
Yeah, because Cazetta, you know, I mean, it's like these Cazetta and Bowser, you know, like if Cazetta hadn't gone to prison like early in the game of the war, you know, those two would have been like, you know, Kirk versus Khan.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah. You know, it would have just been like a chess match, you know, back and forth between the two of them. And, you know, and I think that it probably would have been different if Cazetta had not gone away. I mean, I don't see the outcome being any different, but, no. You know, it probably would have been, you know, a lot different in terms of what happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
But. What an interesting story.
That is. And I tell you what, the when I looked at the Wikipedia write-up on it, holy crap.
I know.
It is enormous.
Uh-huh. That's one of the biggest Wikipedia pages I've ever seen.
Yeah. Like, what?
Yeah, and I mean... You know, I say all the time, it's just like, we're not one of those podcasts, just read the Wikipedia page. But if we had done that on this one, it wouldn't have been a bad thing.
Right. It'd been like a 3-4 hour show.
Yeah. but, you know, like I said at the beginning, you know, the stuff that the Wikipedia page covers is just a lot of stuff that, yeah, it's part of the story, but it's not necessarily going to be all that engaging to talk about.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so if you know, I mean, if I had had more time, I probably would have included more from Wikipedia, and I did include some, but I didn't. You know, if I had had more time to do it and everything, I would have probably included a little bit more. But still, we're at an hour and a half anyway. So
yeah, and seeing a lot of the pictures too online. When you Google it or research it, there's all kinds of, you know, historical pictures that were taken of the bombings. And there's one there from in a parking lot there. Yeah, truth behind. Oh, no. No, that's Waco. What the hell? Why is that listed under freaking cool? Oh, come on. Really?
Was David Koresh a rock machine member?
I don't know. Like, what in the world?
Well, you know, they say you can't trust anything in Wikipedia. So here's one of the bombings from the war, and it's a picture of the compound burning in Waco.
Oh, man.
That's a cult episode that we're going to cover at some point. Obviously. Every true crime podcast does that one. But that's one we're going to wait on, especially when we find, you know, there's a lot of smaller ones and everything like this one that we have for next week. And I don't even know the name of it. I just bought the book. I haven't opened it yet.
Ooh.
No, I just read the description of it, and I'm like, all right, that, you know, that's part of the Canada binge. so next week there's a cult. Don't know which one yet, but it's a obscure one that's really creepy.
Hmm. Creepy.
Yeah.
Heck yeah.
So
yeah, I did get that I told you I got that vinyl from the Source family. Yeah.
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 Have you listened to it yet?
Yeah. Not yet, no. No. I'm like, I just hold off. Right now it's just sitting on the shelf behind me. I'm going, yeah, just for conversation.
Yeah.
So.
That was a crazy ass story too.
That was. Jeez.
But anyway, if you would like to come on to CKCB Presents, hit me up on any of the socials or send an email to ckcbpodcast@gmail.com. You know, if you want to be on that, I mean, the first ever episode of that, we had a listener on with us, and that episode went really well. So you just be able to talk. And you know, the first CKCB Presents, the listener even just took the lead on it. And I was just, I was in Paul's role, just kind of sitting back going, yeah, cool. Yep.
Yeah.
awesome. Wow. Yeah, really?
Like you get to learn. Yeah, you get to learn stuff. And especially, you know, if, you know, if they have been part of a cult or part of, you know, a witness or I don't know. It just, yeah. You know, you get to learn stuff. And yeah. But it's always good to have people on a show that.
Yeah. Well, this.
Like
this,
to talk.
Yeah. This listener, she, it was Kendall Francois. And is from Poughkeepsie, New York. And she's from there. And she was in high school when that shit was going down. So,
oh, wow.
So, yeah. Interesting. So she picked that one. And if you want to come on there, but you don't want to necessarily take lead, but still, you know, if you want to come on, you pick the topic.
Yeah. Pick
the topic. I'll do the research and we'll have fun.
Yeah.
And Paul may be on it. He may not, depending on his schedule, but he's welcome on any of them. Just saying.
Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah.
So, yeah, thanks a hell of a lot for listening. We appreciate it. And we need to grow the show because we want to be at next year's CrimeCon.
Mm.
We want to be sitting there with a booth. And I have word that if we get a booth at next year's CrimeCon, not this year's at Nashville, I don't even know if I'm going to be able to go to that one. But next year, if we're there, I don't know. Might have a in-person appearance by Dick Darwin.
Yeah.
I don't know. I pissed him off last week, though. Yeah. I pissed him off. I argued with him, and he didn't like that very much. He stormed out of here.
Now they only have it in Tennessee, or do they kind of?
Nah, it was in Orlando. Around. It was in Orlando last year.
Crap.
Yeah, and I was there. I bought a ticket.
Yeah,
you know, it was pretty. It was really cool. I had never been into anything like that before. So yeah, just follow us on the socials. Follow us on, you know, subscribe and rate and review, because all of that stuff helps boost the podcast and everything. And you know, I think we're kind of playing against a loaded. You know, a stacked deck as far as getting into Crime Con with a name like Crimes, Killers, Cults, and Beer. Yeah. So we got to really be on our game if we want to get in on that, but we definitely do. And so yeah, definitely. If you like us, tell a friend. If you hate us, tell an enemy.
And if you got ideas. You know, we got ideas and stuff that, you know, something we've never touched on, you know, or never discussed. Throw it out there.
Yep. So all right. Well, that was a fun episode. And so until next week, when we're going to get creepy with a cult. Later.
Later on.